and we want to thank you for joining us tonight with this week's Citizens Climate University, a weekly webinar program of Citizens Climate Lobbies that provides CCL supporters with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics related to effective climate advocacy and climate change. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and tonight's topic is planning your meeting with Congress. Lobbying can be both exciting and intimidating, as we know, and being prepared is one key way to reduce that anxiety. So join CCL Field Development Director Ellie Sparks for a training tonight that's going to walk us through CCL's step-by-step process for preparing for your meetings in Washington, D.C. with Congress and their staff ahead of this November Lobby Day. Let me quickly introduce our wonderful speaker tonight, and then I'll pass it over to her. Ellie Sparks is Director of Field Development for CCL and committed to the success of CCL volunteers working to start new chapters in communities across the United States. Ellie hosts CCL's weekly introductory calls and trains volunteers around the world to lead climate advocate training workshops. She also worked closely with volunteers in coal and agricultural communities, ensuring that all voices find a place at the solutions table, a passion founded on her own family roots in Appalachia and rural Maryland. Our agenda tonight is very straightforward. We're going to have a chance to start with research tips and a background behind how you're actually going to start your actual meeting planning. We'll then show you CCL's toolkit to help walk along the way. We'll talk about meeting roles, as well as highlighting the power of practice, and then we'll put it all together with an actual sample look at how this looks in a meeting. But the key thing I'll also just highlight here before we dive into the lesson is that it's really important to acknowledge that for many of us, getting ready to meet with our members of Congress can feel like an intimidating process. And I think Hollywood at times hasn't helped us with the most accurate window in. And so really, this whole series of trainings that we're doing this fall in the lead up to the November Lobby Day is going to help you feel more empowered throughout our volunteer network to remember that the most powerful tool, the most powerful tool in our box is still real life, authentic, homegrown, grassroots citizen advocates like ourselves. So let's jump right in. And with that, I'll pass it to you, Ellie, to really put this in a framework, talking about your own early lobbying experiences.
Thank you, Brett. So there he is, Eric Cantor, former House Majority Leader. And he was in that role when I started the chapter in Richmond, Virginia back in 2010. And our first lobby meeting was that very next year, 2011. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about the research that we did in preparation for that meeting. So it turned out that at the time I was working for a small nonprofit in Richmond, Virginia. And the young man who was my assistant had friends who had actually worked on Eric Cantor's campaign. So I researched a little bit, asked him what he knew about the office and about Eric Cantor. And we had a meeting we were able to get with the legislative director, and that young man had friends who had worked with that legislative director in Cantor's office. And what he told us, or what he told me, was that the legislative director was a lovely guy, the nicest you would ever meet. So just that little bit of personal digging around let me feel a little more relaxed about going to meet with that legislative director. Then the wonderful thing is we approached those meetings in the very CCL way, being planful and very well prepared. The legislative director really liked meeting with us, and so we met with him actually 7 times. And each time we asked if we could meet with Eric Cantor, and each time he said no, but finally on the 7th time he said yes. Now, over the course of our effort to meet with Cantor, and that took about 2 years, we did research on Representative Cantor, and it turned out he was the only Jewish Republican member of Congress. Now, several of our members in our CCL chapter were also Jewish, so that became a connection for us, and one of our volunteers brought in a handmade challah bread that he makes and sells at farmers markets. Second, we learned that many people in the community really like Eric Cantor's mother. Now, many of us in the CCL chapter were mothers too. And so we felt a little affiliation and and a connection with the fact that people loved Eric's mother. And third, we had developed such a lovely relationship with that legislative director that when we finally had that face-to-face meeting, which was in the Capitol building, the legislative director came gushing out to us and gave us a big hug. And then he shared some news about some work on education that Cantor had been doing in the district. And I could just see how proud the legislative director felt about that work. And so when we walked into our meeting with Eric, that was a thing we thanked him for, because we knew it was top on his mind and it was something he felt really good about. So Brett, that's a little bit about how we got ready for Eric Cantor.
Yeah, perfect. That's a perfect one to win. Thank you very, very much, Ellie. And I think that description is really just a spotlight into the process that you went through as you prepared and you worked towards meeting with the House Majority Leader at the Times office, and really highlights that first time experience all the way up to that actual meeting face to face. And I think also what I heard in there is just your example demonstrating a lot of the key elements that we're going to talk about tonight. The importance of researching ahead of time, building connections with staff. All of these, I think, are often overlooked, and really that key of also finding common ground. So let's actually jump in and talk about the research and the tools that CCL can support you with your local team as you're preparing with your lobby team. So a little review kind of the toolkit that might be available. You can see here we're going to talk about congressional bios or biographies. We'll have a chance to highlight the meeting minutes forms that are available, as well as your meeting plan template. We'll highlight some of the studies and reports that are out there and available. Definitely won't have time to do any of them full justice, but at least give you a little sampler. And then we'll talk about our conference study guide, as well as a supporting ask document. So that's really going to be about the next 10, 15 minutes of our discussion. And the first tool that we're going to highlight tonight is actually that of our congressional biography. So you might be curious, you know, what's on it? How do we find out about it? Why is it useful? All of that. So the biography really combines publicly available information that we grab from databases to update before each major lobby event, along with the research of CCL volunteers in your local group or area. And you can get a copy of that for any member of Congress on Community. And so you can also just search in Community for congressional bios or biographies. That should get you there too. First off, you can kind of see here on the bio that basically on the bios, the first top is data behind their biography. There are schools that they've attended, the background that they had before joining Congress, the career they had, interests they have, religion, religious beliefs, or you know any other forms of appreciation that you can have, along with the committees that they serve on, along with also their congressional record, including their voting record on relevant bills or statements that they've made related to carbon pricing, committee assignments, where they are in party leadership. You can see that there's a lot of ripe ground for discovery to really build out some of that initial research without you having to do a lot of that legwork. There's also additional district or state data that can include demographics, major industries and employers, even major donors in some cases. And all of this data, along with the concerns that are expressed with interested constituents, are really factors in how that member of Congress arrives at their decision. So you want to review the bio along with the previous minutes, which Ellie is going to review in just a little bit, so you can know and anticipate questions that are likely to come up in the meeting. You can also develop an understanding of why that member has taken the positions they've taken, or the community that they're representing, and the perspective that they feel like they're embodying in that representation, as well as the peer groups that are influencing your member. So again, if you have additional time beyond this one biography, you can go further in depth. There's plenty of great research out there. We recommend in particular two sources, checking out your actual legislator's website. You can often find that just by typing in their last name, .house or senate.gov. And then also checking out a great website called GovTrack. That's GovTrack, T-R-A-C-K. To do additional personal work, you can see all the bills that they've been introducing or co-sponsoring, reading more about the stances or public, testimony that they've submitted, as well as any other potential connections that you have in your network within your own lobby group. And so just to show you kind of how you can find these in Community, you can then basically click on that link that goes to the member of Congress bios. You can see this is what that screen looks like on the Community page. And then you see down here at the very bottom, there's a link to either the Senate or the House bios. You can see the Senate view here at the very bottom that my little menu is obscuring. If I click on that, it's going to pull up a Google Drive file. And this file is populated with all of those members of Congress bios. If you have a slower connection, sometimes it takes a while to load. And so to help you do that, you want to scroll down to the very bottom of the list and it will auto-populate more and more. And you can run, you know, a search and do Command F or Control F to find a specific last name to help you winnow your search if that's easier. And say when you found your member, you can then click on that specific file and it will show a print view for you then to decide if you want to save that or if you want to print it out. And in this case, I'll have clicked print and you can see then that it will queue up your printer sequence for you to be able to access that with your own computer. So with that, I'll pass it back to you, Ellie, to talk about meeting minutes.
All right. Thank you, Brett. So we're going to look at previous meeting minutes and how those might influence your meeting plans. On the right-hand side of the screen, you should see a redacted example of some meeting minutes. Now, previous meeting minutes represent information which was shared in confidence. In meetings between congressional offices and CCL volunteers over the years, we consider these meeting minutes to be confidential. This is some of the most sensitive information that CCL possesses. If leaked, this information could destroy the trust our volunteers have been building with Congress. Now, we send past meeting notes to the liaison and the lobby meeting leader. The liaison may share the previous minutes with you, or they may simply provide you with a summary. We do not share our meeting notes with anyone outside of CCL. We trust you, our volunteers, to keep this information confidential. If you want to prepare to address questions, concerns, or misconceptions, then please read the past meeting notes you receive. So for example, if meeting notes indicate questions about the border adjustment in the last two meetings, be prepared for it to come up again. Acknowledge that you understand the border adjustment is a concern you take seriously and be ready to provide answers to any questions they might have about border adjustments. Or if notes show that a staffer expressed concern over the cost of collecting the fee and distributing the dividend, then you could research that question and be prepared to address it in the meeting. Now think of this analogy. You're in class and the teacher starts to drop hints. You might see this material soon, or this section is important. And somehow that material magically appears on the test, right? This is what the meeting minutes are for. It's like the member of Congress telling us what might be on the test. So be prepared to acknowledge and address the concerns or issues raised in previous meetings. However, you should not be surprised if different issues come up in this meeting. After all, a lot has happened in the past 6 or so months since you last met with the office. The important thing is to listen and make connections with the staffer or member of Congress. So what would our meeting plan look like? Fortunately, you might also get some help cramming for that test in the form of a meeting plan that the liaison and groups closest to the member have put together in preparation for a meeting. So others might be helping you with that. And it will feature the following 4 elements, which we will go into more detail in a little bit: primary goal, appreciation, supporting ask, and plan for the discussion. So I'm going to turn it back to Brett to talk to us about additional studies and reports. So Brett, back to you, Brett.
Hey, thanks, Ellie. Yeah, and the meeting plan notes, you know, again, this is coordinated by the liaison or the leader for your meeting in November. So if this is your first time in DC, do not feel like that's your responsibility to have to look for. This is just another support tool to make sure that the full team's on the same page. But that's going to be something that you can look to them to take leadership on. The other thing that we wanted to highlight here is additional studies and reports. So CCL, you know, we've been around the block for a while now, and we have many different studies that, you know, have either been commissioned by us or other important organizations like the Department of Treasury that you can use in your preparations for lobby meetings. So a lot of these are available on this screen. You can see here, if I click on Community's homepage, the very top white toolbar, kind of that main menu, has one option called Resources and Training. If I click on that, you can see a drop-down menu that includes all resources as a link. And then if I click on that, what happens is I get connected to a Studies and Reports tab. If I scroll down on that Resources page, it's a little bit further down there below our levers categories, but keep scrolling down till you see the Studies and Reports category. And from there, you can see many of these different topics. And I'm not going to talk about each of these tonight just because we won't have time to do them all justice. But you can see here, again, the REMI reports regional summaries, the district data available or state level data for household impact studies. We have a dividend delivery study, the Treasury Department's carbon tax analysis. We also have studies that have looked at the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act as a data set. We have a review of all the other carbon pricing bills in Congress out there. And what I'd love to do is just show two of them as particular things to consider. So the REMI study, if you haven't heard of this before, is really a macroeconomic examination. It looked at the climate, the fiscal, the power, the demographic, and the larger economy's impacts of a steadily rising fee on carbon-based fuels, and then with that net revenue from the fee returned to households. And so you can see that we have regional summaries of the REMI report, as well as a national summary, and that's still a really great source of looking at macroeconomic questions. On the microeconomic standpoint, we have the household impact study, and it's a little different because what it looks is a snapshot of just 1 year, and it examines that financial impact across different socioeconomic groups of U.S. households in year one of the Energy Innovation Act with the dividend going back to households. And who comes out ahead, who doesn't get as much back, really looks at that across a lot of demographic backgrounds. So a lot of these are available in, or all of them are available in Community. And again, that's how to access them. And for now, I'll pass it actually back to you, Ellie, to talk about one last tool that we have, the study guide.
Awesome. Thank you, Brett. So we've got this wonderful new tool, the study guide. It's something we've had for just the past year. So if you've lobbied with us before in previous years, you might be thinking, where's the set of laser talks that we've got to study in advance? We don't have that set anymore. Instead, we have this wonderful study guide, and it will help you build your content knowledge and your key listening skills. Now, we have found that meetings go better if we stop and ask what they are thinking after we have shared information on a topic. And doing that allows us to strike a good balance of listening and sharing information. Now, I know the study guide is important for me because when I feel confident in talking about the Energy Innovation Act in my own words, then I'm better able to listen closely to what others in the meeting are saying. I won't be distracted with thinking, am I saying this right? Am I saying this right? How do I respond? So I'm able to be present if I've got my information internalized. Now, when I'm present and listening actively, I can pick up on the underlying values behind someone else's words. And when we connect with values, we open doors. So the study guide is just 2 pages long. It has lots of hot links to resource material. And we promise if you can become well-versed on these topics, then your confidence and comfort in lobby meetings will grow. And remember, if you're looking at those previous lobby meeting notes, they will give you clues on which topics to investigate in the study guide.
And how many people to expect. So with that, I'll pass it to you, Ellie.
Awesome. Alrighty, so we are thinking about the roles, and you can see there's quite a list of roles there, 8 or 9, or maybe even 10. We're going to review each of these in detail in this section. So keep in mind, these are just suggestions. If you have past experiences with your member of Congress or the staff person, you will know which roles apply or don't apply in the meeting, so be flexible. The roles that we suggest ensure that we remember what we want to do in the meeting and we have someone committed to doing it. So we might be asking a volunteer to assume more than one role. So if you have four people in the meeting, then you're going to have to double up on some of those roles. And we want everyone to feel comfortable to contribute during the discussion. So that discussion role is one that is assumed by more than one volunteer in the meeting. And let's look at each of these roles. So first of all, the leader. So we'll look at leaders and liaisons. We have one CCL volunteer who has offered to be the face of CCL in a particular congressional office. We call that person a liaison. The liaison builds a personal relationship with their office. They maintain regular contact. They act as a source of information for the congressional office. And they update the congressional office on CCL progress. Now, often the liaison will serve as the meeting leader as well, although this is not always the case. This does, though, provide continuity for the congressional office and for CCL. If the liaison is not present, then an experienced CCL volunteer will serve as the meeting leader instead. So that brings us to the leader. The leader manages the meeting. They are not dominating the meeting. In a way, they are the conductor of the orchestra. Now, the leader will assign roles to the other volunteers. The leader empowers everyone to share and participate, especially drawing out the constituents. The leader may be the person in charge of handling the transitions between the different parts of a meeting, and they help to keep the conversation on track and wrap things up on time. The leader helps the team to settle on an appropriate supporting ask for the meeting. So, Brett, will you tell us about the asker, speaking of the ask?
Yeah, let's jump right into talking about really how we're framing our ask. So at this point, again, kind of the key thing here is the asker is somebody that can clearly and confidently state our one ask, and that is for the House and the Senate, really focused on bipartisanship. On the House, we're focused on co-sponsorship of H.R. 763, the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. And in the Senate, it's focused on making climate a bridge, not a wedge issue, because really this is what the DC team feels is the most helpful way that the Senate can move forward on the bill being reintroduced. So that asker role essentially is there to make the ask, listen carefully, seek understanding, and then respond directly. So putting that all together, you know, one example of what this can sound like is something like, Representative Smith, our big goal is to get effective national legislation passed. And as you know, we would like you to co-sponsor the Energy Innovation Act, legislation that puts a fee of carbon and returns all the proceeds back to the American households. Is that something that you can support? If yes, then it's an easy follow to, that's terrific. Let's talk about next steps. And you can move along and ask them to do something that you've figured out to continue that conversation. And if no, continuing to find out additional information about what their hesitation might be. Again, framing it such as, you know, could you please tell us a little bit more about what you'd need to be able to support this? Or could you tell us more about, you know, what specific objections you have about the proposal? And it's really key to acknowledge that many members at this point may not be ready yet to fully commit to co-sponsorship. And if they aren't at this point, you're in luck because we have many other supporting asks. There's a real clear way that we can build out from there. And so one way to kind of distinguish what we're talking about between our primary ask and supporting asks is what you can see here on the actual slide right now. So with the primary ask, you want to swing for the fences and be bold. You don't want to talk yourself down as you negotiate or, you know, have kind of a weaker offer or kind of a tepid response. And you want to make sure to wait for a clear and direct response rather than assume that you've heard what they've said without fully listening and exploring their reaction. Now, you can think on the other side as supporting asks being steps forward. So they're little bite-sized chunks to move your member up that ladder of engagement. Ellie likes to frame this as looking for that next date. You're in a relationship. You want them to get to say yes to something so that you have a chance to go back and go to that next restaurant together or whatever you'd like to say. And so with that, to specifically talk about this fall, those specific and actionable steps, we actually have some legislation of interest that we're including as our supporting asks. So CCL has identified four bipartisan bills that have all been introduced in Congress this session that could be useful supporting asks. And our primary objective in promoting any one of these bills is to really encourage bipartisanship on the topic of climate change in Congress. So these bills are complementary to the Energy Innovation Act, and they address policy issues that a carbon price doesn't. And CCL is not formally endorsing these bills, but believes that they're worthwhile for members of Congress to consider and will move that needle in the right direction. So you can see that each of these bills' descriptions are actually available in community on the Supporting Asks page. And I'll just put that link in the chat right now so you can follow along with me if you're interested. And a reminder also that you can follow along with our slides tonight. I put that earlier in the chat too. But here's those four bills. So the Use It Act, and you can see these all have really catchy, creative acronyms often to describe the policy's focus. Use It Act is utilizing significant emissions with innovative technologies. And you can see here that it's a bipartisan, bicameral bill that supports really this key focus of the development and demonstration of actual practical carbon capture and removal technologies. It's got over 37 co-sponsors, Democrats and Republicans in the House, and 16 in the Senate. And at this point, the other key thing is that carbon capture and sequestration refers to technologies that capture and sequester CO2 from such emitting sources as biomass or fossil fuel power plants. That next act is the Coastal Communities Ocean Acidification Act. And that act is specifically amending the Federal Ocean Acidification Research and Monitoring Act of 2009, would require that the Secretary of Commerce, through NOAA actually, is responsible to update or report at least once every 7 years and assess the impacts of ocean acidification on coastal communities. The Disaster Act has actually already passed the House, so this is a great Senate ask, and it requires the Office of Management and Budget to submit an annual report to Congress. That report must include all federal obligations related to disaster response, mitigation efforts, administration costs, all like that. And then lastly, you can also see that the Reclaim Act is listed here. And this is a first time for CCL to focus on the Reclaim Act, even though it's been introduced in prior legislative sessions too. And the Reclaim Act is both current in the House and the Senate, and it amends the Surface Mining Control and Reclamation Act to make a specific amount of funds available for abandoned mine lands available to the Department of Interior to distribute to states and Indian tribes to really promote their own revitalization efforts economically, to diversify and develop, especially in communities that are distressed as they transition from coal mining. So this list isn't exhaustive. There's plenty of other bills out there. And if there's a bill that your group would like to use as a secondary ask that isn't on this list, please contact the Senior Director of Government Affairs, Ben Pendergrass, and use your best judgment. So with that, actually, I'll pass it back to you, Ellie.
Thank you, Brett. So let's talk about the note taker, which is a very important role in the meeting. Hopefully, the leader will be able to put an experienced lobbyist in this role. Someone with experience being in CCL lobby meetings can pick up on the subtleties in the conversation and quickly identify important emerging themes. Note takers are very aware of body language and mood, as well as what the staffer and the member of Congress are saying. So great notes help us both locally and nationally. Locally, the notes keep a running record of where our members of Congress stand and how a member's position has evolved over time. Our notes inform future meetings and ensure solid meeting follow-up. And our notes enable us to act on action items we might otherwise forget and helps to pass knowledge on when a group or a liaison changes his leadership. Nationally, our notes give us a sense of the national picture and help identify trends in Congress. So a good note taker is able to capture our supporting ask. If the member or the staffer agrees to our ask, our supporting ask, we want to know so we can follow up and help them fulfill their promise. They track concerns of the staffer or member with respect to our policy, any questions that come up from the staffer or the member regarding our policy. They will track any recommendations the staff or member of Congress has about our policy, points about our strategy or policy that the staff or member have found interesting. And then they document what was the tone of the meeting. When were they engaged? Was the member of Congress interested? Was the staffer hostile? Did they want to be anywhere else but the meeting? What was their body language like? And we have our groups discuss this after the meeting down the hall to make sure the impressions match with what the note taker noticed and what everyone else in the group observed. So there also would be action items for the member or the staffer and action items for the group. And there's a whole page on community with tips and tricks for taking great notes. The time monitor. Alrighty, so this person, whoever's doing this job, at the beginning of the meeting will ask, how much time do we have with you for this meeting? Now, this year, this is new, the time monitor also observes and takes note how much time the CCL volunteers are speaking and how much of the time the staff members or the members of Congress are speaking. And the goal for us is half CCL volunteers, half congressional staff or member of Congress. So you'll be tallying the number of open questions your team asked in the meeting minutes as well. Time monitor gives the signal when 5 minutes remain in the meeting. Almost everyone worries that they will get stuck talking with people for too long and not have a gracious way out. Know when the staffer or member is done and reads their body language. They're looking at their cell phone. They're telling you it's time to end the meeting. When they check the time or close the notebook as well, that's an indication that the meeting is over and it's time to wrap up. It does not mean that we want to cram in every last little bit of information we didn't get to say. If they're clearly ready for the meeting to end, then we end it gracefully and with respect. We don't rush ourselves, but we should be looking to begin concluding the meeting before the people we are meeting with want to do that. We want to leave them wanting more and a reason for us to come back for another meeting. We think it's extremely important to give plenty of listening space and focus on the member of Congress or the staffer. The time monitor can also notice if there appears to be an unasked question or the goal is to meet them where they are. Okay, the appreciator is a person who expresses gratitude for something the member of Congress has recently accomplished. Ideally, the constituent gives the message of appreciation. You want to do some research in advance of the meeting so you know what to thank them for. And it has to be something you genuinely appreciate about them. This sets a positive tone. It disarms folks. It takes the chip off of our shoulder when we go into those meetings. The follow-up. So I love this little saying, if a tree falls in the wood and no one is around to hear it, did it make a sound? What about a meeting in DC? If no one follows up, will anything happen? So in general, it's the liaison who does the follow-up and carries the relationship forward. Sometimes another constituent might be a better fit. And occasionally, there's a different person on the team who may not be a constituent, but they just happen to click with the member or aide during a meeting, and that person may be the best one to follow up. So the follow-up person drops off the thank you card on the same day, ideally including a local photo. And looking at the notes, the person who does the follow-up identifies specific things that we agreed, CCL volunteers agreed to do, or that the member of Congress agreed to do for us. So we identify both of those. And the person doing the follow-up is politely persistent with the staffers or the member of Congress's office These offices are very overwhelmed, and they actually appreciate persistence about once a week and being reminded of what they committed to doing. Lastly, the leaver. This is the person who leaves the one-page ask behind. Our one-page ask is the only thing we leave behind. Remember to leave it behind. You might bring other materials to your meeting, but don't offer to leave them behind. They've got too many papers already. As we looked at that in Lobbying 101, congressional offices have received anywhere from a 200% to 1,000% increase in constituent communications in the past decade alone. And by law, members of the House have been limited to 18 staffers since the 1970s. So we don't want to overwhelm them with tons of handouts. And anyway, most staffers are millennials, and they would prefer electronic documents over a printed copy. If they don't ask for a specific resource, they probably won't read it. If they do ask for a specific resource, 9 out of 10 times they'll want an electronic document. So again, we only leave the one-page primary ask behind in order to prevent overwhelming them. Now, we might bring other resources to the meeting, like media packets and the booklet of faith statements or letters to the editor. You can have hard copies of these additional resources on hand to share with the staffers. Don't necessarily plan on leaving the media packets or the booklets of faith, just show them. Only leave if they ask for it. And we do, though, deliver those constituent comment forms and the leader letters, and we definitely leave those behind. And I think it's nice to put the most sincere letter on top, so you might read through them a little bit in advance. And you might even want to read an excerpt from that beautiful letter aloud to the staff person or member of Congress. And you can probably rest assured that they will read some of those letters that they get from local leaders and voters. Now, that's your team. After you're done and you leave the office and shake hands, we want you to scoot down the hall. You can see they're away from the office for a debrief. Do not stand near the door because you will be sharing some of your feelings and emotions, and you don't want that echoing into the member's office. While the meeting is fresh on your mind, the note taker reads the notes aloud to the other members. Everyone confirms the follow-up. Who is going to write and deliver the thank you card? Maybe you'll just pass it around right there as you're standing. Who will file the meeting online? Who will send requested information to the member or staffer? Who will add a post about your visit on social media? Who will plan to generate a letter to the editor that mentions the member of Congress fondly by name? We forgot to mention that before you exit the office, invite the member of Congress or the staffer to stand with you for a photograph. That's always a lovely thing to do as well. So many volunteers bring some thank you notes to the lobby day, and during that brief debrief, you can pass a thank you note around and people can sign their name, and someone will pop it back in and give it to the receptionist. And I love it when people bring thank you notes that feature the district or the city or the state where they are from. So have fun picking out thank you notes if you decide to bring some thank you notes.
But I think the key thing here before passing it back to you, Ellie, on this is that we don't expect you to be a professional lobbyist. In fact, you know, we are glad that you're not. And staffers and members actually find themselves, believe it or not, stunned when we live up to our reputation as being one of the most well-prepared citizen groups on Capitol Hill. So let's really review how to really put this into the importance of practice.
Awesome. Thank you, Brett. So we demonstrate our respect for their time when we have done some practicing in advance and we've got a clear meeting plan. You can practice the prompts in the study guide. We don't want you to be people and let you in the meeting. It's not a lecture, it's a relationship. If you can, carve out a little time to practice with each other before or during the DC conference. If you have that opportunity, you will go into your meetings with more confidence. You will be confident about your own abilities, but also have confidence and trust in your teammates. So practicing ahead of time allows you to learn which issues your teammates are well-versed in so that you may defer to them when appropriate. And when the members and staffers see you working together smoothly, they will come away even more impressed by our capacity to make things happen.
Bingo. Yeah, so let's kind of just talk about what to expect in terms of having time to practice at the conference or at the Lobby Day here in November. So we have a whole Preparing for Lobby Day training page. Again, we've highlighted a lot of links that are actually central to that specific page. They all kind of come from this Grand Central training location. And you can plan to have your schedules, your member biographies, and your meeting plans to those who are going to go to DC the week before the conference on Thursday. So for this coming November Lobby Day, that's Thursday, November 7th. Your team lead will coordinate scheduling with your team's time to practice ahead of time. And this can look anything from scheduling ahead of the actual arrival to DC. You could meet on Thursday or Friday evening on Zoom. There's free lines that you can have personally. We can also help coordinate, or your stay or regional coordinator can help coordinate with one of their lines. So you can familiarize yourselves even before you meet in DC. That's always a great recommendation if people have the time. And then as your team arrives in DC, you know, we've got specific rooms that we're going to be able to meet with as you get onboarded in, you know, to the Sunday evening throughout the whole day, actually. And those three rooms for the actual November conference are the following three rooms, and I can put them in the chat as well. But it's Chairman's, Calvert, and the Presidential Board Room. So you'll be able to highlight those as well. This will all be available as well in your final email review. We're just giving a super early preview. And then we actually have designated meeting times during our actual conference programming on Monday. So you'll have a chance to meet depending on the time that your meeting starts on Tuesday during a breakout time on Monday. And that's all available on that link that I said that I sent. So again, if you have any questions after November 7th about your schedule, so this is far in advance, you can ask Amy Bennett, but make sure to wait until you get your schedule to ask her any questions. And we do recommend even checking in with your regional or state coordinator ahead of asking Amy, since she's going to be really busy during that time frame. But, you know, just again, the key is to practice as a team, but also do your part practicing on your own. You know, there's a great approach that our executive director, Mark Reynolds, does. He calls it mirror work. He looks directly right in the mirror and he says his lines and he practices till he feels comfortable delivering in a really casual way so that you can also get that practice ahead of time. And also just being ready to be flexible. Like Ellie already highlighted, one of the key elements is being adaptive. So following your team lead in the meeting and being ready to think on your feet is really essential. Meeting is one step in really having a process of winning over allies. And what isn't accomplished in that one meeting that you have can be worked on the next day. So as long as you leave them feeling with a positive feeling about who you are, we've really been able to build that relationship further. So with that, we are at the end of the webinar. We're almost done with the training. And before going to final questions, we'll close actually with a setup for a practice communications exercise. So with each of these lobby training webinars leading up to the November Lobby Day, we're including a really live demo section so you can kind of highlight some advanced listening and communication skills. So the precise topic or content of our actual activity tonight isn't the important part. What's actually important to key into is the adaptive process that Ellie, our CCL volunteer in this demonstration, uses to draw more information from the person she's meeting with, who will be me. So I'm playing a member of Congress. Ellie's the CCL volunteer. And the situation is Ellie has just mentioned the Energy Innovation Act to me. So with that, I'll say action.
So we propose a fee on fossil fuels, starting low at $15 a ton and steadily increasing every year.
I'm sorry. I actually should say that I am not playing a member of Congress. I am playing their staffer, and there's no way that my boss is going to go for that. No way. Not interested.
Well, thank you for your honesty. Can you tell us more about what's behind that no way?
Sure. You know, we get that we need to do something, all right? I think that's a pretty standard position now. However, I know that my boss is really concerned about the emissions increasing in China and India. If the U.S. is going to be the only person that actually does this, it's going to kill our economy, at the expense of everyone else, or at our expense for the benefit of everyone else.
Oh, yes. Thank you. It sounds like supporting American businesses is important to you and your boss.
Yeah, definitely. We need a strong business community here domestically if we want a healthy economy. And we already know this. China has tons of people willing to work for lower wages, outcompeting us and putting us at a manufacturing disadvantage. So if we increase our energy costs, then more businesses are going to be bound to move overseas.
Well, keeping business here is important to me as well, so thank you for mentioning it. Do you have any thoughts on how the U.S. might get China and India to come along?
Well, we certainly can't regulate China, and subsidies don't cross borders either.
I've been scratching my head on that question, too. It seems like through regulation, we are already raising the costs of energy here in the U.S.
Yeah, we'd love to actually find something that levels the playing field for U.S. businesses rather than just a regulatory approach.
Ooh, we really appreciate the conversation about a level playing field for all nations because it's something we've put a lot of thought into as well. Would you like to hear about what we've learned?
Sure. So we'll break there. And hopefully, again, just even in this little nugget, what you've picked up on at least a little bit is Ellie's asking questions to draw more information and having a dialogue with me. She did so to determine really my underlying concern about the China comment. She agreed with the value that I framed in this dialogue to seek out common ground. And she asked more clarifying questions before asking as well for permission to proceed. So think about how that different conversation may feel, especially if after my China comment, Ellie were to have launched right into some data or information point about the world moving forward without us. Would have felt much more adversarial. And instead, she steered that conversation towards common ground. And before asking for permission to proceed, she shared what she learned after that. So I'm more prepared in that stance to hear what she has to say next. So with that, I think if you're to summarize this whole training on a 3-card summary tile, it's this: be prepared, be focused, be engaged, right? You want to be clear with your ask. You want to connect it locally and personally and make that authentic human connection. You want to meet with members, even if it's 15 minutes. You want to be sure to deliver that ask early and be focused so you don't burn precious time as a team being off message. And you want to be engaged so you can collaborate with how you can work together with the office, see them as allies. They can work further on advancing climate change as a topic that they feel safe about stepping forward in the community on and leading. Don't overwhelm them with handouts. Don't snow them over with paper. The less is better. You know, be sure to follow up immediately in your action steps that you've committed to in that meeting too. That's really, I think, a key part of engagement. If you have any questions, I'll put a link to both Ellie and Maya's email in the chat here. You can see mine on the screen is just simply my first name, Brett@citizensclimate.org. Ellie's is simply her first name, Ellie@citizensclimate.org. And we always want to route people to the forums too, because there's a lot of great questions happening every day. Chances are if you've had a question, somebody else has asked it already, you can already get their answer without having to wait for somebody to email you back. So with that, I'll pass it to you actually, Ellie, to close us with an inspirational quote. But I'll just say this even before passing it to you. You're the reason we're going to make a difference in November. All of you on the training tonight, you are going to help us shift the dial and already are making an impact thanks to your involvement. So we really appreciate you for joining us in the spirit of CCL. Let's focus on somebody else's new perspective of what this organization has done for them.
So our volunteer said, Citizens Climate Lobby has taught me how to be a more effective citizen and advocate. I am grateful for the hard work of thousands of CCLers around the world. You help make the vision of a livable world for all future generations into a reality. I can't think of more important work.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.